So let me then, with our remaining time, hit the high points on things we're going to see these concepts pop up in a day-to-day environmental practice in law. One, cost-benefit analysis. This entire framework underlies the concept that most regulations by executive order must pass a screen to show that the benefits they yield exceed the costs they'll impose. Executive Order 12866, which goes back to Reagan days, essentially requires the Office of Information and Regulatory Assessment to take every major regulation and calculate what its benefits might be and weigh it against its cost. If it can't make that demonstration, it doesn't get out of the box. So these concepts are life and death to major environmental regulations. And if a rule fails cost-benefit analysis, it is a basis to challenge the rule. The United States Supreme Court last year struck down a major rule restricting mercury emissions from power plants because EPA failed to take account of the cost-benefit assessment in a way that they felt satisfied the Clean Air Act. Number two, this entire framework suggests that there are alternative ways to yield environmental benefits other than passing laws and regulations. You can design markets to reach the same point and let individual actors collectively reach the same point. So environmental markets and tradable environmental goods are an enormously vital and important part of environmental law. You can get tradable permits, which allow you to emit pollution at a certain level and then sell them to someone else who needs them, because it would cost them more to install controls than you. And the theory is that the market lets those permits get shifted around without any governmental control to the point where the most efficient controls are imposed based on the costs. And we'll talk about that with the Clean Air Act, because that's the heart of Title IV with the acid rain regulation. It's also being proposed specifically for how to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. So last one I'll point out, and this is one that's likely to go to the Supreme Court probably within a year. How many of you have heard about the concept of the social cost of carbon? Okay, good, I found one where not everyone in the room knows this. Okay, if the idea here is that we have externalities that market prices fail to capture, federal regulations can try and put a thumb on the scale to require those costs to be considered before an agency takes action, even if there's not a market price for it. So what does that mean? It means that by executive order, if a major federal agency wants to take an action that is going to require an increase of emissions of greenhouse gases, the EPA and Office of Information and Regulatory Assessment are charged with assessing a cost of every ton of CO2 emitted. And then that's used in the cost-benefit assessment of that rule. So even though there is no market price, I should be careful there. There is usually no market price for CO2. And you can emit it for free. If you want to get a major federal rule passed, you're currently looking at having to prove that a million tons of CO2 that this rule may cause to be emitted is resulting in a social cost of that carbon of $85 per ton. That's an $85 million thumb on the scale to justify the passage of the rule and its increase of greenhouse gases. Even though there's no market, even though there's no trading, even though no one's buying it in the federal context yet. So social cost of carbon is essentially a shadow market that attempts to harness these same ideas, but in the process of evaluating whether or not a rule gets passed. Does that make sense? And the reason I say it will go to the Supreme Court is the Seventh Circuit just upheld social cost of carbon in a very obscure rule dealing with efficiency of energy or certain types of small engines. And there's a lot of concern that the basis the Seventh Circuit used could be subject to attack before the Supreme Court. So with that, I feel like we could talk all week about this, but any other questions about economics or anthropogenic and rights-based approaches in environmental law, or ecosystem approaches in environmental law, or all these tools before we get to the nitty-gritty next week?
With that prisoner's dilemma, when you talk about if they don't rat on each other, it's economically deficient. Mm-hmm. What do you exactly mean by economically deficient?
In the sense of that the best of all outcomes would be that they don't rat on each other.
Right.
So neither of them go to prison. But if you look at their separate decisions individually, they're incentivized to rat on each other. So that if they make the right individual economic decision, the end result is not the best you get from looking at from the overall market perspective. So okay. It's economically deficient from the market perspective.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Any others? Okay, next week, we're going to areas I think you guys know. We're going to start looking at public and private nuisance, trespass, negligent, tort theories for dealing with environmental law. And I'd like for you to take a certain example in your mind, because I find reading this stuff is kind of, it's a mess unless you have a problem to apply it to. So here's the question I'm going to kick around with you next week. Imagine the Houston Ship Channel. Houston Ship Channel is lined with refineries, chemical plants, energy facilities, and I can tell you that there are layers of sediment going back 80 years containing contamination. Suppose you have a group of people who live near the Houston Ship Channel who have decided they've had enough and they want to sue on nuisance, negligence, trespass, anything else they can think of under tort law to try and hold the people who've emitted those toxins into the environment responsible for it. How would you sue? Who would be your pool of plaintiffs? What claims could they bring? What proof do you need to have in hand? What are the defenses the companies are going to throw up? Before you start saying, oh God, what a silly question, I've seen that complaint. It was 1,400 pages long. So this is real stuff. Think about that. Other than that, enjoy the weekend. And I forgot one last thing. There is an outside chance I may be gone the Wednesday after Labor Day. I'm trying very hard to find a substitute lecturer for you if that happens. For what it's worth, I'll be in Mexico for a meeting of the Commission of Environmental Cooperation, which is the NAFTA body for interesting stuff. Bottom line is, if we miss that class, I will arrange a makeup for you. It may be a lunchtime class, so I don't eat into your other time. And I may bring a guest speaker in from off campus, maybe I'm thinking the General Counsel of the Environmental Defense Fund, or some other folks would be interested to hear from. So watch the website. I'll have more information for you there. Have a good weekend.